Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Good morning. It's great to see you. I got to know, is there anyone excited to be at church today? Yeah. Awesome. Well, today we are continuing our series, Holy 30. But before we get there, I want to give a few shout outs to some people. First off, every single Sunday is someone's first Sunday attending Next Level. So if you're a regular attender, would you help me welcome our first time guests that are here today? I want to give a special shout out to those who are watching online. Thank you for being a part of our online community. We do wish you were here in person, but we love that you're a part of that. If you guys would do me a favor, and if you go to our YouTube page, you can like and subscribe there. It'll help keep you updated whenever you do have to miss an in-person service. I want to give one last shout out. Our area is very heavy military area, and we appreciate those that are serving for our country, and especially because we know that we have you on borrowed time. We only get you for a couple years, and so we want to give a shout out to those that are serving our military. They're here. Would you help me welcome them for being here? All right, so today is starting week 3 of the Holy 30 Challenge, and if this is your very first time, you can catch up. You can start at any point. If you were here on week 1 and you've been going along, I hope it's been good for you. I've heard a lot of feedback from people who have really enjoyed this challenge. I've had multiple people come up to me and say, hey, is this something our church could do every year? They've really appreciated it, enjoyed it at the beginning of the year. But I've also had multiple people who have come up to me and said, I started off strong, but I fell off. Like, I did a couple days really well of this, but then I just got busy or I didn't prioritize it or whatever. And if that is you, I just want to encourage you, don't allow one bad day to stop you from completing this. Don't allow one bad moment or a few bad hours or you slipped up or you forgot. Don't allow that to cause you to just say, okay, I'm going to throw in the towel. Because that's so often what happens. When we try to develop a new habit, we'll be really focused for a while and we'll stay focused on our goals. And then we take a break or we cheat or we stop or we just don't do it. And then once we don't do that, our brain says, oh, it's fair game. Let's just throw everything away. In fact, I saw a TikTok that went viral this past week that I think illustrates this perfectly. A mom asked her toddler daughter to bring her coffee, and what happens next is very funny. Check this out.
You're doing so good. You're not spilling any. Okay, now watch the step. Go slow over the step. There you go. Good job. Oh, we spilled a little, but that's okay. Oh, don't look at it. Oh, did you panic? It's okay. It's okay. Your sock got wet and you panicked. It's all right. Okay.
Like, 100% I can relate to that, especially when it comes to my diet and sticking to things. I'll be doing good all day, and then someone will drop donuts by, and I'm like, well, it would be rude if I didn't eat their gift of the donut. And then once I eat the donut, then it's like, the diet's gone. Eat whatever you want. Like, it's crazy how our brains do that. And so I just want to challenge you. We're midway through this Holy 30 Challenge. No matter where you're at, whether you're sticking with it or you've fallen off, or if this is your very first time, just start. Today is a new day, and you can pick right back up. And here are the 5 things that we're working on, trying to do every single day as a part of the Holy 30 Challenge. The first one is to pray 3 times a day. And prayer is an incredibly important part to the Christian life, but it's also something that is easy to neglect. And so if prayer is something that you do struggle with, let me give you some encouragement. There are some ways that you can put prayer in your life that becomes very easy habit to develop. Like, for one, I developed the habit of, before I get out of bed, I'm going to talk to God and read the Bible. Before I check my smartphone, before I get online, I'm going to pray and read the Bible. And it's just this habit that has developed to now I don't even think about it. And I want to encourage you to do that. Also, if you put prayer as a part of your meal time, you have the 3 times built in. Just as long as you eat 3 times, if you pray before that, you've got 3 prayers. So there you go. There's easy ways to make this as a part of your life if prayer is something that you struggle with. Number 2 is to read the Bible daily. And our church has a plan that we've been going through. You can do your own plan if you want to, but if you'd like to join us, it is on YouVersion, and you can make Next Level your church. Here's something that's been kind of cool about this whole journey. When we first started this 2 weeks ago, there was 91 people who had made Next Level their church and decided to do this journey with us. But as of today, there's 137. So we're gaining traction. And so, yeah, you can clap for that. The steps to find us on YouVersion and how to do that, they'll come up on the screen. And you can just follow those along and you can jump in at any point. Number 3 is to invest weekly in one unchurched friend or family member and then invite them to church. Number four is fast one time a week. If you missed the sermon last week, I encourage you, you can find it on our podcast, wherever podcast, wherever you listen to them, we're there. You can also find us on YouTube and watch the replay of the sermon. But this fasting one is one that it's the biggest surprise that I have personally had with this challenge so far. I was not looking forward to fasting. I didn't want to fast. It was not one that was what I was excited to do. But it is the one that I feel has benefited me the most. It's been amazing that we're on 2 weeks now. And so one day each for the last 2 weeks, so 2 days total, for 24 hours, I fasted from food. And it was amazing how much energy I had during the day. I went into it thinking this is going to be horrible and like this is just going to be the worst thing ever. But I actually was re-energized and excited. I needed less caffeine on those days than I do on a typical day. And I also felt a special connection with God. There just was something about that day of dedicating those times. And especially when I felt hunger, it just brought me into the presence of God. So if you haven't tried that, I encourage you at least listen to the sermon from last week and then give that a shot. Number five is for 10 minutes a day, read a book to inspire spiritual growth. The QR code that we've mentioned, we've listed a handful of books if you don't know what to pick or kind of struggling with it, or maybe you picked one and you didn't like it. And I want to highlight one of those books that's on this list. This is a book called Not a Fan. And if you have not read it, I highly recommend it. It's by a pastor named Kyle Eidelman. And the subtitle is Becoming a Completely Committed Follower to Jesus. It's a very challenging book. It'll step on your toes, but he also uses humor, which I really appreciate and like. And so if you need a book to read to help inspire you, this is the one I would recommend. So today, though, we're going to focus on the third aspect of this challenge, of the five challenges. And what's going to lead us in our conversation is a text that comes from the New Testament part of the Bible. And throughout this morning, what I'm going to do is we're going to explore the text, and I'll give you some insight into the text and talk about who wrote it. But then through this text, we're going to get our application and our inspiration and our challenge. But at Next Level Church, we honor the text because we believe it's God's holy word, and we do that by standing to our feet and reading it nice and loud. So I invite you to stand up and read with me 2 Corinthians 5:20. Now, when we get to the reference, we have a little bit of fun with that. We'll say 2 Corinthians 5, and then where there's two dots, we just pump our fists and say dot, dot, and then we'll say 20. And it has been a known fact that God shows favor to your football team if you do the dot, dot. I'm just telling you, if you want your team to win, do the dot, dot. Just kidding. All right, so I don't see any 49ers fans. So the Cowboys fans, you got... If you don't do the dot, dot, and y'all lose, we know why. It's because of y'all. Just kidding. All right, read it with me nice and loud. It says, "We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God." 2 Corinthians 5, dot, dot, 20. Now that we've read the text, let's go to God in prayer. Would you bow your heads, close your eyes? And I will invite you to say a quiet prayer just in the stillness of your heart to God. Would you just pray quietly, "God, speak to my heart and give me the courage to do whatever you tell me to do." Would you spend a few seconds just quietly talking to God? God, that is our prayer, that you would speak to us today. And we know that you will tell us not what we want to hear, but what we need to hear. So help us to not be afraid to obey you, but to obey you out of love and out of honor, and out of trust that you know what's best for our lives. We ask, God, that you would just do immeasurably more than we could ask or imagine. And God, I ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight. Oh, Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may have a seat. So I want to give a little bit of context to the scripture that we just read together. It was written by a guy by the name of Paul. He's often referred to as the Apostle Paul. And at Next Level, we say that Paul is a what? Prime time player. I feel like the enthusiasm of that was like down. It was like prime time player. No, this is a big deal. Paul is a really big deal. He wrote over half of the New Testament, and we spent a lot of time talking about him because he gave us more insight on what it means to be a Christian than anyone else. And there was a group of Christians living in an area called Corinth, and they had some issues. And I'm actually encouraged by this because as a Christian, I can relate to loving Jesus but still having some issues. The church in Corinth, they were jacked up. They had some messes. They had some things. And we know that Paul wrote three letters to them. We only have copies of two letters. In his first letter to the church in Corinth, he references a previous letter that we don't have a copy of. I wish we did, but we don't. So we call his second letter 1 Corinthians. That second letter, which we call 1 Corinthians, ended up causing all sorts of issues in the church, and they had pushbacks, and there was division, and so Paul then writes a third letter, which we call 2 Corinthians. Is everybody confused? Good. What we're going to read today is part of Paul's third letter, which we call 2 Corinthians. And I want to give you some context about what we're going to read, because in order to understand our theme verse that we read together, you need to understand the context. You need to understand Paul's overall point in this chapter. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, we're going to start at verses 19 and read through verse 20. Paul writes, "All this is from God." Who? There's an underlined word. Would you humor me and just say that out loud? 1, 2, 3. Reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of that God was the world to himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them. And he has committed to us the message of. All right, so Paul is wanting to make sure that we understand the theme of this section is reconciliation. And in case you missed it or you zoned out or you've got like ADD and you're focusing on something else, he's like, I'm going to say reconciliation 67 times in like two sentences just to make sure that you understand and you get it. This is a really big deal to Paul. When Paul wrote this letter, though, to the church in Corinth, he didn't use the English word reconciliation because he wrote this in Greek. Paul used the Greek word alasso, and that means to change or exchange. So everywhere in this verse where you see the word reconciliation or some form of it, what Paul is meaning is to change or exchange. What Paul is doing is he is explaining the gospel to the church in Corinth. And the way he's doing it is through this idea of reconciliation, which what Paul means by that is that we give God something. What do we give God? We give God our mess. We give God our sin. We give God our anxiety. We give God our worry. We give God our problems. And in exchange for that, he gives us his love and his grace and his mercy. That's an amazing deal. And Paul is saying, when you make this exchange with God, when you say, hey, God, here's my life, my mess and all. Here's my brokenness. Here's my sin. I lay everything at your feet. Then God takes that and says, I see your gift and I raise you love. I raise you grace. I raise you mercy. I give you these amazing things. And when we receive the amazing gifts of God, a change happens within us. So there's a holy exchange of we give God our mess, he gives us his love, and then our hearts change. And that heart change is what motivates us to be better people. That heart change is what leads us to forgive those who hurt us. That heart change is what leads us to love ourselves, because we don't love ourselves based off our own image of ourselves. We love ourselves because Christ loved us first. It changes everything. And Paul says that if you're a Christian, you've made this exchange. Now, I want to make sure you know that this is written to Christians. If you're here today and you would say, I'm not a Christian, this is a great place for you to be. I think Next Level Church is a great church for you to come and check out things and learn and hear. Yeah, you can clap for that. But what we're about to see is not written to an unchurched person. It's written to a Christian. And so what Paul is saying is if you've taken this reconciliation, if you understand this, what you are understanding is the gospel. Here's what the gospel is. It's a simple message. The gospel is the good news that Jesus died and rose again for the forgiveness of our sins. That's what the gospel is. Now, the gospel is kind of like the ocean. And I talk about the gospel a lot at Next Level because I think it's not just the beginning of our faith, it's the A through Z of our faith. And if you imagine an ocean, when you first walk out into the ocean, it only goes up to your ankles or to your knees. It's very shallow. But the deeper you go in the ocean, the deeper the water goes. That's what it's like with the gospel. And Paul is bringing up to the church in Corinth again, you need to understand this idea of the gospel. You need to understand this idea of this exchange, this reconciliation. The gospel helps us know that we are more sinful than we care to admit and more loved by God than we could ever imagine. The gospel is not just something you believe one time. It's something that you preach to yourself every day. The reason that you don't want to read the Bible in the morning is because you need the gospel, because there's something inside your head that says, I don't need God. The reason we struggle to pray is because of pride, because we think, I've got this on my own. We wait until our world falls apart before we cry out to God. And the gospel would say, hey, the reason that you're pushing back on God, the reason that you don't want to commit to God is because of your sin, and you are way more sinful than you'd ever care to admit. But you're way more loved by a God than you could ever imagine. That God passionately, madly loves you and cares about you. So once you understand this, then you can get into our theme verse for the day. 2 Corinthians 5:20. Paul says, "We are therefore Christ." I want to stop there just for a second. I say this often, but anytime you're reading the Bible and you see the word therefore, you need to ask yourself, what's it there for? And Paul is saying in this instance, once you understand reconciliation and once you understand the gospel, this is your calling. So if you're here today and you are a Christian and you would say, I accept the gospel, I believe the gospel, I am a Christian, this is what you are called to do. We are therefore Christ. There's an underlying word. Would you just say that out loud? 1, 2, 3. Ambassadors. As though God were making his appeal through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. What's really cool about this verse is that Paul uses an illustration from his day that is actually still relevant to us today. Sometimes when Paul gives illustrations, we can't relate to it anymore. It's from the ancient world, and so we have to know something about history. But today in America, we have ambassadors. We understand what that term means. Here's what an ambassador is. An ambassador helps promote peace between his country and that in which he or she is placed. So America has ambassadors that we send all over the world, and they represent America. And their goal is to bring peace, to connect the country with America, and try to work out problems and issues and point people back to peace. And Paul says, if you are a Christian, then you are an ambassador of Jesus. You're God's ambassador. So if you're a Christian, as an ambassador of Jesus, there's two things that we do. Number one, we represent God's message. And if you're taking notes, I encourage you to write that down. Number one, we represent God's message. This is incredibly important for us to get. Whether you want to get this or not, it doesn't matter. This is Paul's point, that if you are here today and you are a Christian, you represent Jesus everywhere you go. It is impossible to say, I'm a Christian and only going to represent Jesus on Sunday at church. You represent Jesus literally everywhere you go. You represent Jesus at your job. You represent Jesus with your family. You represent Jesus in your country. You represent Jesus when you're sitting at a restaurant and the waitress gives you horrible service. You represent Jesus. You represent Jesus when you go to Walmart and for some reason they have 76 lanes and no one working. And then they have the gall to tell me to check out my own groceries. I'm like, come on, like, hire somebody to ring up my groceries. In that moment when you're feeling frustration, you represent Jesus. Everything that you do, everywhere that you go, there is no off season to being a Christian. You are called to be an ambassador of Jesus. But this isn't easy, is it? Because our flesh gets in the way, and it's easy to get frustrated with people, and it's easy to forget who we represent. And sometimes we just think about ourselves, and we think, well, what's the big deal if I'm a jerk to them, or if I'm mean to them? It doesn't matter anyway. I'll never see them again. But you never know how God is going to use you or your interaction in someone's life. A few years ago, my son was on a soccer team, and they sent out an email to all the parents saying that they didn't have enough coaches. And they were begging parents to step up to coach. And I thought about it for a few seconds, but I was like, there's just no way. I can't make the time. Plus, I don't know enough about soccer. But, like, I don't have the time to do this. So I had to tell them no. So at my son's first soccer practice, the person that steps up is an employee from the county that's putting on the soccer league. And this person lets us know that they don't want to be the coach, that they're only doing it because they're paid. And I'm like, that's a horrible message to tell these kids. Like, just fake it. Put a smile on your face and do something. Like, but literally was like, I don't want to be here. I'm forced to be here. In that very first soccer practice, the coach did not teach the kids soccer. What the coach did is line them up to play red light, green light. And then they played other kids' games like Red Rover, or they played freeze tag. They spent a whole hour playing games that you would play at an elementary school playground. And I was like, you got to teach them soccer. Like, they don't even know. Like, they don't know where to score. They don't know anything about the game. And so we had one practice, and then we had a game. You can just imagine how that game went. No kid knew what they were doing. No kid knew, like, anything. But somehow, by a miracle of God, my kid's team was winning. Now, officially, the league does not keep score, but I do. And we were winning 2-0 in the first half. And I was like, I don't know how this is happening. Like, it's like accidental winning because none of the kids know what they're doing. We just had a couple that were pretty aggressive and we were doing well. But in the second half of the game, the coach decides to make decisions that literally hurt us. The coach was literally putting in players that shouldn't have been in and taking out players that wanted to play and putting in our best scores, putting them as the goalie, and they didn't want to play the goalie. And the coach was just making decisions. And I'm thinking back to, of course you're making these bad decisions because you don't want to be here. You don't care. But I do care because I paid money and I'm competitive and I want to win. So my blood just starts boiling. And can I just tell you, it shouldn't have. In the grand scheme of things, this was not the World Cup. It was like four-year-old soccer. Like, it doesn't really matter. But I was ticked off. Like, I was angry. And every time the coach made a decision, I just started grumbling under my breath. And I was like, oh, and I finally said it out loud. I said, after the game, I'm going to give that coach a piece of my mind. And my wife kindly reminds me, hey, you could have coached. You didn't sign up to coach. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I didn't. You're right. But I convinced myself that I was going to go over, and if I talked to the coach after that game, it was not going to be kind or polite. I was going to tell it because I was so frustrated because she was wasting my kids' time, she was wasting our time, and we paid money for her to coach the team. I talked myself out of it, though, and I said, okay, I'll have a conversation at some point, but it's not healthy for me to do it when I'm this angry, when I'm this frustrated. Nothing good will come of it. So I just left. That was Saturday afternoon. Sunday morning, I get up to preach at Next Level Church. And wouldn't you know it, my son's coach was sitting in the fourth row right there. And I get done with the sermon, and I walk right up to the coach, and I'm like, hey, it's so good to see you. And the coach says to me, yeah, people have been inviting me to this church for weeks, and everyone keeps saying how nice and kind everyone is. Dodge that bullet. I tell you that story just to make the point that in that moment, when she was making me frustrated, all I could think about is how she wasn't doing her job. But God reminded me, big picture, that I represent him even when I'm frustrated with people. And you never know what interactions you'll have with someone. That person that you're ugly to, that you fuss out, that you give the bird on Interstate 64, that person could show up at church one Sunday. Every person that you interact with and meet with, Every restaurant employee that you tip, everybody is an opportunity to represent Jesus. And you can't turn it off. You can't. There is no plan B. It's not like Jesus said, okay, I'm going to trust that God's people are going to tell their friends and family about me. But if that doesn't work out, we'll have this other plan going on. There is no plan B. For 2,000 years, we're the plan. This is it. And so if people have a good understanding of God or they don't, it is based on our interactions with them. There's a quote that's very convicting by Dave Adamson. He says, if the world hates you because of Jesus, that's expected. If the world hates Jesus because of you, that's a problem. Jesus said, in this world you'll have trouble and you will have people who will hate you. There are people who just don't like Christians for whatever reason, and that may come. It may happen just because you love Jesus. But the world shouldn't hate Jesus because of his people. That we are ambassadors and we represent Jesus. This is why Christians should be the hardest working employees at every job. This is why Christians should work with integrity and not cut corners. Because it's not about you, it's about who you represent. This is why if you're a middle school or high school student, you should work as best and as hard as you can at your school, and you should be one of the friendliest students around. Why? Because it's not just about you, it's about who you represent. You represent Jesus everywhere you go. If you're a Christian, you are an ambassador of him. And that leads to a second thing that ambassadors do. As an ambassador of Jesus, one, we represent God's message, but two, we deliver God's message. We represent God's message, but at some point we have to connect the dots. At some point we have to tell people the reason that I'm kind, the reason that I forgive, the reason that I own my own junk and apologize for it is because of the gospel. It's because of Jesus. If we don't connect the dots, people will just think we're kind people or we're good people, and we want to be good, kind people, but we want to let people know why. And if you're an ambassador of Jesus, it is on you to deliver the message of Jesus to people. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to share the gospel with every person you meet right when meeting them. Hi, my name is Rob. Let me tell you about Jesus. I don't think that's very effective. What we need to do as Christians is we start with, number one, represent God's message by loving people well where they're at. And we treat people well, and we're kind to people, and we forgive people, and we model for Christ well. And then we look for opportunities to share the gospel when it is appropriate. If you grew up in church, you probably heard of the word evangelism. It's a churchy word that it has a very cool meaning. The word evangelism literally means gospeling. To evangelize is to share the gospel. This is why Paul's message of reconciliation is so important for our text today. Because as an ambassador of Jesus, you are to gospel everywhere you go. You're to connect the dots and to tell people about Jesus in a way that they can understand it. Evangelism is not as much about bringing people to Jesus as it is bringing Jesus to people. Evangelism is not about you having all the answers or you knowing everything about the Bible. It's about you living your life for God and then connecting the dots to people. Yeah, I don't know all the answers either, but you know what? I know that God saved me, and that's the reason that I did what I did today. Yeah, I don't understand everything about the Bible, but I do know that God saved me, and that's why I'm showing you love today. As ambassadors, it is on us to share the gospel with others. Now, if you hear this, you might become afraid. Like, I don't know, maybe you have confidence and you're not afraid of that, but I know a lot of people that to think about telling someone else about your faith, it's kind of scary. It's like, well, what if they reject me? Or what if they make fun of me? Or what if they think I'm some weirdo? Or like, what if they don't want anything to do with me after I tell them about Jesus? That's a real fear. And I want to give you some stats from a recent Gallup poll that I think will help you feel not quite afraid. Gallup surveyed thousands of people, and here's what they found. 82% of the unchurched are likely to attend church if a friend, coworker, neighbor, or family member invites them. So 82% of people. Now, let me just spin this in another way. That means that more than 8 out of 10 of the unchurched said they would come to church if they were invited. So we have this image in our mind that if we talk to people about faith, they're going to run away scared or they're going to make fun of us. But according to survey, over 8 out of 10 people would say, yeah, you know what would get me into church? If someone would just invite me. You know what would get me to talk about faith? If someone would just bring it up. If someone would take that initiative, I would be open to it. Gallup estimates that there are 135 million people who are unchurched today in America. 135 million. If their research is correct, that means that more than 110 million people would attend church if they were invited. That's staggering. But here's the bad news. The good news is people are more willing to hear about Jesus than what we thought. The bad news is, according to Gallup, only 2% of church members invite an unchurched person to church. Jesus said it this way in his day and age. He said that the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. There's lots of people out there that would accept a message to Jesus. There's lots of people that are looking for and yearning for that part that's missing in their soul, and you have it. And as an ambassador of God, it's up to you to connect the dots. As Christ's ambassadors, we convey Christ's message of good news, and we live in ways that show God's love for the people we encounter at work and everywhere we go. As Christ's ambassadors, it's on us to share the good news by the way that we treat people, but then also by what we say. We've got to connect the dots. And this is God's plan to tell people about him. Every time a tragedy happens in America, someone will ask me, where was God in the midst of that tragedy? Every time there's a school shooting, every time there's a horrible accident, every time there's some natural disaster, people come to me and say, well, where's God? If God is real, where is he at? And I think that's the wrong question to ask. The better question to ask is, where are God's people? Because we're the ones that represent God. And when the world falls apart, God is trusting us to be the hands and feet of him to go into the broken world and to connect the dots. And think about it. In your life, if you have a good opinion of God, it's because someone that loved you cared enough to tell you about him. But if you have some issues with God, isn't it also because you've had some issues with God's people? Do you see how powerful this is? God's plan is that we are to represent him to the world. And Christians are called to be ambassadors of Jesus. That means that we take the gospel with us everywhere we go. As a pastor, it's not easy for me to meet unchurched people. I deal mostly with Christians. Maybe they're lapsed Christians, former Christians, but most of the people that I deal with on a weekly basis have some interaction with church. And it is a little awkward when I go out into the community and meet people and then say, hey, I'm a pastor. It just leads to all sorts of awkward interactions. But I know as a Christian, I am called to try to invest in and find people that don't go to church and have a positive influence in their life. And so I often pray, God, would you bring people in my life that I could invest in, that I could invite to church and invite about you. Earlier this year, a couple started coming to the gym that I work out at. And at the gym, most people just put their headphones in and no one wants to talk. No one makes eye contact. There's very little interaction. But this couple actually had personality and liked to laugh and joke. And I started to get to know them. And I came home after a few weeks of this and I said, Monica, I think this is my couple. Like, not in a weird way, but like, I think this is like the couple that God's brought to my life to invest in, to end up sharing about Jesus. But it's really weird in the gym. How do you transition from like kind of joking around, barely getting to know someone, to talk about Jesus? Like, that's an awkward, hard right turn. Like, how do you do that? And so one day I was just looking for an opportunity, and I mentioned this guy, his hoodie. I mentioned it in a church service. If you were here in October, we did a series on fear. And one of the weeks I mentioned this guy's hoodie. His hoodie had a great message on it. It said that fear doesn't stop us from dying, it stops us from living. And I shared that image up on the screen. And on Monday morning when they came into the gym, I was like, I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to shoot my shot. I'm going to tell him. I said, hey, I'm a pastor, and you helped influence my sermon. And he said, huh? And I said, yeah, it may be weird, but the hoodie that you wear in here all the time, it's a great quote, and I shared it with my church, and they loved it, and they were writing it down. And he goes, no way. I've never been a part of a sermon. That's incredible. And then he goes, make sure you don't use this hoodie in your sermon. And he turns around, and it was a skeleton having two middle fingers up. And I was like, I won't use that one. Don't worry. But we had this interaction. I was like, okay, I just kind of threw it out there. I planted a seed. Now he knows that, you know, I believe in God, and we'll see what happens. Well, weeks go by, and there's no interaction. There's no, like, church interactions or God interactions. We're friendly. We joke around, but I don't know how to bring it back up. And I kind of felt like the ball's in their court. If they're interested, they'll ask some questions, but nothing was happening. And so I literally just started praying, and I said, God, would you just give me an opportunity? Would you just put it in them, a desire to talk about this stuff? Because I don't know how to bring it up. And after weeks of praying this, one morning, I'm lifting, and they'd already come in. We said hi to them, and they started doing their stuff. And she stops and gets off of her machine and comes over to me and says, hey, I was just wondering, what's the name of the church that you pastor? I said, oh, Next Level Church. And she goes, okay. Where is it located? And I told her about it. And she said, cool. And I said, do you guys go to church anywhere? And she said, no. She said, I grew up going to church, and it's something I always want to get back into. And then he spoke up and said, yeah, my family only went to church on Christmas and Easter. We never really went on a regular basis, but it's something we would be interested in. And I said, okay. And I handed them a card that had our service times on it. And I said, hey, we'd love to see you sometime. And I said, there's no pressure to attend anytime, but I also want to let you know, because this was like the first week of December, I said, our church does something for the community where we deck out our church in Christmas lights. And we do this just as a gift. And I know you guys are new to the area. And so if you're ever free on one night, it airs every night from 5 to 9. And he goes, no way. He said, we literally were driving around last weekend looking for Christmas lights, and we couldn't find any. He was like, this is so cool that your church does that. We'll definitely do that. And so they made a date of it. And they came on a Friday night, and they watched our Christmas lights. But then I didn't see them for a few weeks at the gym. And my brain started getting worried. I'm like, did we offend them? Did they not like the light show? Like, what happened? Of course, it had nothing to do with me. They just changed their gym schedule. They started going in the afternoons. And so weeks go by, and finally, like the very beginning of the new year, they come in the morning, and they say, man, we've been dying to see you. We have some questions for you. And I said, all right, what are your questions? He said, well, first of all, we love the light show. He said, we sat through the whole thing three times. It was so incredible. He said, but my wife and I, we've been having a debate ever since we saw the light show. She is convinced that you are the one rapping in that light show. And I told her, there's no way it's you. And I said, yeah, that's me. And he goes, did you write that? And I said, yeah, I wrote it. And he goes, this is the honest goodness truth. He goes, no way. He said, that is now my favorite Christmas song. He said, I've been searching Spotify trying to find that song. I can't find it anywhere. He said, ever since we visited your church at that light show, I have left my radio station on, tuned to your church's radio station, hoping that I'll just drive by at some point and the song will come on in my car. He was like, I absolutely loved it. And I said, oh, that's so honoring. That's so cool. And thank you so much. If you like that, we'd love to have you visit on a Sunday. And he says, you know, we're not ready for that yet. We're not ready to visit on a Sunday. I said, hey, that's cool. There's no pressure. Like, just wanted you to know it's a safe place if you want to come and visit. Can I just tell you that this is the couple that every day when I take that one time to pray at lunchtime for the three times to pray, this is the couple that I'm praying for. And I'm praying for an opportunity to invite them to come to church next Sunday. It's Donut Sunday, and my thought is if they don't want to come for Jesus, maybe they'd come for a donut. Like, but I'm praying for an opportunity. And I want to challenge you that if you're here today and you would say, I don't have a lot of great unchurched friends, or I don't know who I would invite, or I've invited everyone I know and no one has come with me, would you just spend a few seconds saying, God, would you provide? Would you bring someone into my path? And then look for an opportunity. Look for an opportunity to be an ambassador for Christ, because you never know how your interaction might connect someone to the God of the universe who loves them way more than they could ever imagine. And this is why Paul says to us in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 20, we are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. So may we be a people that understands the high calling we have to tell people about Jesus. May we know that there is no plan B. May we understand that our goal is not just to get people to church, but it's to introduce people to the God of the universe. And may we look for opportunities to represent Jesus well as his ambassadors. Will you pray with me? God, we come before you. We just thank you that you are an amazing God who's entrusted us with this challenge to represent you well. And I ask you to help us to rise to the challenge, that God, we would step up to the plate and look for opportunities to tell others about you. God, what an honor it is that we get to represent you, that we are your ambassadors. And God, it can be scary to bring this up, so we ask that you would give us opportunities, that you would give us conversations, that you would give us moments to plant seeds in people's lives, that we wouldn't do it with any other reason but just to connect people with your great and amazing and matchless love. And we ask that you would use us here to transform the world. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.